You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Ten, nine, eight, seven, ignition sequence started. All engines are started. We have ignition. 2, 1, 0. We have a liftoff. We have a liftoff, and it's lighting up the areas. It's just like daylight here at Kennedy Space Center. The second flight is moving off the pad. It is now clear of the tower.
Hello and welcome to the White Rocket Podcast, brought to you by White Rocket Books in association with the Earth Station One Network. It's one long conversation with a variety of guests about the best of popular culture. I'm Van Allen Plexico. This week's episode, we're going to do something fairly similar to the previous episode. I'm still waiting on a few guests to come available to do some of the discussion shows that we plan to do this summer, but in the meantime, I'm back with another sort of one-on-one discussion. This episode actually features two separate topics. First, there is me on the way back from Birmingham, Alabama, driving back up to Metro St. Louis, talking about what I just experienced that weekend at the Alabama Phoenix Festival in Birmingham. Second part of the episode, I will be talking about some of the things that I consider very important when writing a novel. You may not agree with any or all of the things that I lay out there, but I'm throwing it out there for your consideration, discussion. These are things that at least have worked for me. So first, I'll be talking about the Alabama Phoenix Festival, and then I'll go into my list of probably 5, 6, 7 things that I consider important steps when one is going to write a novel. So here comes Van from a few weeks ago in the car, talking into his cell phone as it sat on the dashboard while he's driving back. Kids, don't try that at home. Now, here we go. Here is Past Van.
All right. This is Van Plexico. On the way back from Birmingham, Alabama, this is June 1st, 2014. And I have just been a guest for the last 3 days of the Alabama Phoenix Festival in the Sheraton Hotel and the Birmingham Jefferson Civic Center facility in Birmingham. Several notes. First, I'm making this recording while I'm driving. Not that dangerous. I'm just talking while I'm driving. It's all good. We all do that every day, talk while we're driving, so I'm good there. But that's why you hear the strange noises of the rain, because it's slowly raining here. I'm somewhere in Kentucky right now, heading north. That's why you hear the sounds of the road inside of the car. And it's why the quality of the audio is not up to the standard that I usually try to have. This is being recorded on my iPhone, which is pretty darn good considering it's being recorded on a little telephone, but okay. Second, my voice is a little hoarse because, again, I've just spent 3 days as a guest of the convention where they had me doing about 10 panels, most of them on Saturday, all during the day and the evening, and then another one today. Plus, I was talking to people all around me and seeing so many various friends and colleagues and meeting new people, and so I've done a lot of talking the last 3 days. So I'm a little hoarse. But finding the time to do an episode of the show is not always easy, and I figured that being alone in a car for hours and hours on end were represented really as good of an opportunity as I'm likely to get. So I should go ahead and take advantage of this opportunity to get an episode in. So first, I'm going to talk a little bit about what the convention was like and some of the fine people that I got to see and some of the things that we talked about in panels and otherwise. Second, I'll talk a little bit maybe about writing a novel, because I have very specific thoughts about what you should do when you write a novel. And I'm certainly not going to present myself as the greatest expert in the world by any means, but for many years I have studied what the best writers, at least in terms of how I, you know, think of them, the esteem that I hold them in, I've studied what they have said about it as well as what they have actually done. And so I've made a sort of a list, a bullet point list of the things that I think are important to do before, during, and even after you write a novel. So I'll be getting to that shortly. But first, to borrow a phrase and an idea from the Earth Station One mothership, that is the network that we are a part of here at the White Rocket Podcast, here is my con report, or con report. I have to swallow after doing that. I'm even more hoarse than ever now. The Birmingham Phoenix Festival. This was its, I believe, third year. The first 2 years they held it at the Cahaba Center, which is a really nice sort of conference center south of Birmingham on 280, heading out towards my hometown of Sylacauga, Alabama. This year they moved it into town to the Sheraton, which is adjoining the BJCC, the Birmingham Jefferson Civic Center. And so, you know, there's good things to be said both ways. This was a very good convention for me. It always is. It always has been. I've never had a bad year, either in terms of fun, interesting conversations, lots of friends, or in terms of sales, right? I go to these conventions not just to kind of mingle with my readers and to meet new readers and to introduce them to my work and to hang out with the other people that are interested in the things I'm interested in, but I also go to make money, honestly, to try to to sell my books, which hopefully will entertain people in the short term and bring them back in the longer term to get more. So it's always been a successful convention for me on all those counts, and it was again this year. And so I offer my thanks to the organizers, the volunteers, the other guests, and especially all the attendees, all the people that came out and paid their money for access to the convention, to come to the panels, and to come in the dealer room and talk to me and meet me and check out my material. I had two big tables covered with stuff this year and did pretty well. Some of the highlights I would mention, at least for me, at the Phoenix Festival this year, Brett Brooks and his wife Allison were at my table much of the weekend, and those of you who were there probably met them. Brett is a role-playing game designer and now an author. He has a book out, and I'll be talking more about it and maybe interviewing him on this show down the road a little bit. Also, David Wright, who will be on the show in the next episode or two. David has been associated with White Rocket in the past. He wrote a short story or two in Gideon Kane, Demon Hunter, the anthology that I put together originally for Airship 27 a few years ago. He wrote a story that's been published in a like Seventh Star Press anthology about sort of animal sidekicks. I'm really anxious to read that. I haven't read it yet. He's written a variety of shorter fiction, but this is his first novel. It's called My Brother's Keeper, and we'll be talking to him about that. So he was at my table, and he had his books there. Getting to see all the other authors and publishers and artists, like right down the row from me was Sean Taylor and his daughter Sheriz, who both write, Bobby Nash, Michael Gordon of the ESO podcast, Tommy Hancock of Pro Se was there. I got to meet Logan Masterson, and I saw Alan Gilbreth, Michelle Weston, just so many. Kimberly Richardson. I'm leaving out probably a dozen, but there were just so many cool people that I got to meet. If I think of more, I'll throw them out. Of course, the organizers of the convention, Steve Charlson, Tim Stacks, Stan Daniel, do an outstanding, absolutely outstanding job every year of putting this convention together, of organizing it, making it fun, both for the people that volunteer, for the guests like me, and for the public. Marie Jones and her husband, Russell, who are just fantastic people. Marie does the publicity for it and gets people to know about it, which is hugely important. You know, if you hold a convention and nobody knows it exists, nobody comes. So you've got to have publicity. And then a variety of others that do the volunteer work, like, you know, working in registration, helping carry boxes around, telling people when they need to go to their panel. I had one young lady whose name escapes me, but I'll figure it out, who every time I saw her coming, I knew, oh gosh, I've got to be at a panel. And I would go running right ahead of her like she was the posse coming to get me. So that was a fun little thing all weekend. Okay, some of the panels and things that we talked about. On Friday, we had a Ready Player One discussion panel from the literature track with James Palmer and David Wright and me, and I think maybe one or two other people were on it, maybe that I don't know or I didn't know. But, you know, I've already done a show with John Ringer about Ready Player One, so everything that you out there in the audience want to hear about that particular topic has already been talked about on this show. But it was a fun panel where we kind of went through that same sort of thing on Friday. Saturday was a very busy day, lots of panels. And the thing that really stands out in my memory about the Saturday panels is that we did two or three panels that involved adapting comics to TV and movies, and then sort of we did an Avengers panel, and then a panel about the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and those all just sort of rolled together as one big general discussion about what's so great about the Marvel Universe and how is it being translated into movies and television. We talked about S.H.I.E.L.D. and Agent Carter and things like that as well. So several hours on Saturday, that's where a lot of my voice went, was dedicated to talking about the Marvel Universe as it makes its transition very successfully, I think, and I think most people would agree, to television and film. And we speculated a little bit late Saturday night on what we will get in Avengers 2 and Avengers 3 and the next Captain America movie, the next, you know, Thor movie, the Guardians of the Galaxy, and so on and so forth. So all of that was very fun. And then interestingly enough, and appropriate for this conversation right now, the one panel I did today, Sunday, was on podcasting. And so on that panel were hosts of three other shows, plus Bobby Nash and Michael Gordon of Earth Station One, and me. And so I was able to talk about this show. So if any of you folks are listening that I met on that panel or in the audience or were on the panel, welcome aboard the White Rocket, and I appreciate you checking it out. And I was able to talk about the sister show, the Wishbone Podcast, and kind of how I came to do this whole thing, the whole podcast thing, and how technically to do it. You know, what software do you need? What equipment do you need? Where do you go? And how do you store it? How do you get it out to the public? So we sort of did a little bit on that, and that was a very, very good panel. And then I packed everything up and I left. So thanks again to David, to Brett and Allison, to my sister Lisa Plexico, that I get to see only once or twice a year, but this Birmingham convention is one of those occasions. And so it was really fun to get to see everybody again. So many great friends. This the Phoenix Festival in Birmingham, Yeah, I always say this is the one convention where I can barely turn around without running into somebody else that I know and that I'm really happy to see that I haven't seen in a while. James Palmer, that's who I forgot that I left off from my earlier list. The great writer and editor, he's done some stuff for White Rocket. And he's the co-creator and editor of Monster Earth and other books from his Mechanoid Press. So, all right, so that was our con report for this week. I'll try to do these in the future, just give a little summary of the things that were happening at the conventions that I probably have just been talking about on previous shows. And I know that I've mentioned the Phoenix Festival coming up. I know I mentioned it on the Wishbone show. I'm not sure if I've mentioned it on here, but okay. Now, let us move on to the other main topic for this episode, which is writing a novel. Now, I've put together a list, and I'm probably going to do an expanded series of articles on this. By the way, I'm crossing the Ohio River. I believe this is the Ohio River, and so that's the noise you're hearing, is my car moving across the big giant bridge over the Ohio River in Kentucky. But I'm going to do probably a series of blog articles for some venue, not sure what yet, where I'll expand on these. But what I'm going to do now is just going to take my bulleted list of things to do or not do to write a novel, and I'm just going to talk about them a little bit. So this will be another one of those episodes where there's not a guest, it's just me talking with all of you. Okay, so here we go. Novel writing 101. I do not claim to be an expert. These are just things that I've learned over the years. And let me preface by saying that it's been a long road. If you listened to my earlier episode about writing influences and the shattering novels, you know that I said I wrote a novel in like eighth grade, if you want to call it a novel. I tried, and I wrote a novel in like 10th grade. I actually used a typewriter that time. It wasn't just handwritten. So I was always trying, but it was always very difficult. It seemed like a very, very, very difficult task. And so it makes me think that maybe some of you out there want to do this. I know that lots of people these days want to write books. It's almost like it's really an interesting phenomenon the last few years that fewer and fewer people are reading novels, but more and more people want to write them. I really think that one day we're going to get to the point where the only people that read novels are people that want to write them. There won't be any overlap. The two diagrams will line up precisely. You know, everybody that's reading novels is writing novels and vice versa. So, and that's, you know, that's a good thing in terms of having more access to be creative yourself. That's great. But it's a bad thing if we lose our audience of people who want to just enjoy the material. You know, it's kind of like if the only people watching a TV show were people that worked on TV shows, you wouldn't have a very big audience. So hopefully that will reverse and that more and more people will start reading books. Certainly the Kindle and other ebook, media allow much greater flexibility with that. So hopefully that will improve. Okay. So, for many years, I was trying to write a novel or novels. I wanted to, but lots of sort of psychological hang-ups would get in my way, and I don't think they were necessarily unique to me. I think that they're human, generally speaking, issues. And so maybe some of the things that I'm going to lay out here in a step-by-step manner will help you, if you want to do that, to get past those hang-ups and get going on it. Because above all else, nothing helps you succeed like success, right? Once you know you can do it, there's no stopping. At least to me, it seems. It's getting that first thing done and feeling good about it that gets the ball rolling. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, writing is completely a matter of momentum. When I start writing and it's going good, I do not want to stop. But if I stop for any length of time, it becomes increasingly difficult to start again. I either have the momentum or I don't have the momentum. So here are some of the things that will help you get that momentum going, get confidence, and get those things written. All right, so let me access my little list here. Number one, be confident, period. You've got to be confident that what you are producing is good and has value. If you doubt yourself, if you second guess yourself constantly, you'll probably never finish a single project. And afterward, you will certainly never be able to persuade anybody else to read it, to evaluate it, to give you any suggestions or any criticism to improve. So if you are filled with self-loathing and doubt, it shows. And I've got to say this because this is something that's come up on Facebook and other locations recently. I know so many writers who are plagued with doubts and anxiety, and they second guess themselves, they doubt the quality of their work. I just do not understand this. I guess maybe I was that way once. But I say this with absolutely no arrogance intended, no smugness intended, just utterly sincere. I'm not that way now. I'm very confident in my work. I feel like I'm a pretty good writer. If I did not believe, I think I said this on a previous episode, if I did not believe that I was a good writer and that what I'm doing is worth your time, I wouldn't waste your time. I wouldn't tell you to go read it because I would feel like I was getting you to waste your time. So have confidence in yourself. Believe in what you're doing. It will show through in a positive way, and it will make potential readers more confident that they should devote that much time and effort to your work. So confidence is the number one thing. Now, how do you gain confidence? You gain confidence by successfully writing. And I'm going to tell you in the remaining bullet points some ways to do that. All right? So, number two, and I may lose track of the numbers. I don't have them actually numbered on my list here. But this, I'm pretty sure, is number two. You have to begin with character. I know that you have a great idea for a story. You have a plot, or at least you have the idea of a plot, and that's awesome. There's hardly anybody I know plots the way I do. Lots and lots of plots. Lots and lots of plots. But that's all well and good. But what drives your story is not the plot. What drives your story is the character. If your character doesn't do anything interesting and doesn't have anything that changes them during the course of the story, then your story has simply become a laundry list of this happened and this happened and this happened. Who cares? If you start with character and make the readers care about your characters, and you make the characters multidimensional enough that they behave normally and naturally as intelligent beings, presumably, right? Then they will dictate how the plot unfolds. And this is why I always say I plot, but I plot loosely. I leave lots of wiggle room for my characters to change things and do different things. You know, I like having a roadmap, but I don't like to plan out every square mile, every inch of the trip. I like to know that I'm starting in New York and driving to Los Angeles, and I like to know that maybe I'll hit the Grand Canyon along the way, I'll cross the Mississippi River along the way, you know, and a couple of other things. Maybe I'll stop at a particular restaurant I like along the way. But other than that, I'm going to let the road itself unfold naturally based on what the driver, the characters, the main characters, you know, want to do. How do they naturally react? So start with character and make your characters as real as possible, and they will take care of it for you. And, you know, I would summarize that by saying, if you know your characters well enough, they will lead you on the journey rather than you having to drag them where you want them to go. All right. Next, hit the ground running. Now, I'm assuming that you're wanting to write, if you listen to my show, to this show, you probably are wanting to write fun adventure action stories. If you're wanting to write romance novels, well, this sort of applies too. If you're wanting to write deep philosophical literature, this probably doesn't apply so much. But if you're wanting to write fun, fast-paced action adventure novels, whether they be westerns or sci-fi or superheroes or lawmen, detectives, whatever you want to do, you need to get the reader's interest immediately. And if you're going to submit it to a bigger publisher, you need to get the editor's attention immediately so that they don't fall asleep and then throw your manuscript in the trash and move on to the next one. So I am a firm believer in action from word one. When I figure out where my story is going to start, I try to figure out the most action, suspense-oriented scene or moment in that beginning part of the story. Even if you have to kind of tweak things a little bit timeline-wise and move something up and then flash back for a few, you know, minutes or hours or days or whatever, start with something exciting. When I wrote Lords of Fire, I didn't start with Tamerlane as an infant being adopted by General Nakamura. I didn't start with the Emperor receiving the mysterious, you know, voice in the darkness that tells him to go into the above. I didn't start with any number of those things. I started with the greatest robbery in history. I started with Tamerlane in a black suit, like Mission Impossible, sliding down a cable into a impregnable bank vault. And, you know, and in the very next chapter, I have a scene that ends with a giant explosion. So things are happening. Things are exciting. Things are moving along. I think probably my strongest beginning of any novel I've ever written was the beginning of Hawk, where the very first page, Hawk wakes up, quote-unquote, naked and screaming in the heart of a shattered galaxy. And then he's on the run trying to figure out just what's going on. I mean, you can't get any more tense of an opening than the beginning of Hawk. So, you know, start it with a bang and then let the reader sort of catch up on the fly. Then you can fill in the background as you go along and do it in little bits and pieces. The dreaded info dump is when the entire narrative of a story stops suddenly because the author has decided to suddenly roll out a box full of background information. I was rereading the beginning of The Sword of Shannara a while back. I mean, I read that book originally in high school. It's basically Terry Brooks, his first big novel back in the 70s, his take on Lord of the Rings, his attempt to do Lord of the Rings. I mean, lots of fantasy authors have tried to do their take on Lord of the Rings. His is, I like to say that The Sword of Shannara is to Lord of the Rings as Kingdom Come was to Led Zeppelin. Trying really, really hard to sound just like it and being fun, but not nearly, you know, measuring up to the to that material. So you really want, well, what I was going to say about Sword of Shannara is at the beginning of Sword of Shannara, there's this moment about 20 pages in, after a fairly interesting and tense beginning, where a wizard type character just comes out of the darkness and basically sits down and gives this entire background history to the two main normal characters. And, you know, they might as well have bracketed that entire chapter and headlined it Info Dump. You know, fantasy, high fantasy, like Lord of the Rings. That kind of stuff is infamous for the dreaded info dump, where we try to roll out thousands of years of fantasy history in one chapter and then start the action back up again once everybody wakes up. So you don't want to do it that way. You want to kind of lay it out in dribs and drabs and pieces as you go on the fly, as part of conversation. I really don't feel like that there's ever any need for the narrator voice, the sort of passive narrator voice, to jump in and take over and start instructing the reader. Here's what you need to know. No, let the characters talk to each other, and the reader learns from that in pieces as they need to know it. And a lot of stuff can just be taken for granted. Most readers, if they're going to read your stuff, they are already familiar with that type of material. If you're going to write a high fantasy, you don't have to explain why there are elves and dwarves running around. People that are reading fantasy already kind of expect there to be, you know, something like elves and dwarves and goblins or whatever running around. You don't have to justify it. You don't have to explain it. Just, it's there. It's just like when I wrote the first Sentinels novel, that was my guiding principle is people that are reading this understand superheroes. They already know that what a superhero universe and world is like. I'm not going to spend 15 pages explaining how there came to be superheroes in the world. Who cares? There just are. It's a superhero story. There are superheroes. We get it. We drive on. We want the fun stuff. We don't want the boring history lesson. Okay. Next. Whoop. And the list turned sideways. Your craft. Now, this is very, very important. Know your craft. Understand sentence structure. Know grammar. And as I like to say, have as many tools in your toolbox as you can. Because I honestly feel like, you know, think about poor Rob Liefeld. Rob Liefeld, you love the guy in the sense that clearly he loves and has great affection for superhero comics. He loves them. But when he starts drawing them, he doesn't have all the tools that are necessary. He's pretty good with some tools, and he's terrible with other tools. You know, it's like if he was the plumber, he might be really good at tightening bolts on your pipes, but he has no idea how to install your sink. And so you need to have all those tools in your toolbox as a writer. You need to understand sentence structure to a very good degree. Or have a good editor, but that just makes a lot more work for you. You need to understand grammar. Spelling doesn't hurt, right? I mean, I know it's easier now with spell check and autocorrect and everything, but often that just creates properly spelled wrong words as opposed to misspelled correct words. So, you know, I remember years ago reading something that said, know your craftsy before you try to get artsy. And, you know, when I was younger, I didn't really understand that. But what it's saying is, before you try to be really fancy, be solid, right? Before you try to do all the frills, know how to do the no frills. You know, before you try to build a house of seven gables with drawbridges and Jarvis electronically inside running everything, first prove to yourself that you know how to build an outhouse, at least, right? That you know how to put four walls and a floor and a ceiling in and a roof. Learn your craft before you try to get very artsy. Now, many people, certainly me when I was little, don't want to hear that. They want to just jump right in the deep end and start doing all the fun stuff. It's kind of like analogous in music. Learn how to play the instrument before you start trying to be Eddie Van Halen or Jimmy Page. Understand the basics of it. Get the chords down, right? Well, it's the same thing with writing. Once you know that you know what you're doing writing, it makes everything a whole lot easier and sound a whole lot better, and you have a whole lot less correction to go back and do after it's been edited. And if it hasn't been edited, then we can't even talk at all, because at that point, you are doing fan fiction or you're doing amateur work. Now, there's nothing wrong with doing fan fiction. There's nothing wrong with doing amateur writing. Those are great things. But I'm talking to you in this specific conversation about how to accomplish becoming a successful author, and that's different from just having fun with it. If you want to have fun with it, great, go have fun with it. That's awesome. But if you want to be successful and have readers and actually make money, then you need to treat it like a business, you need to be professional, and you need to do the type of things I'm talking about here. Okay, next. There is a musicality. Wow, I am losing my voice terribly. Let me try that again. There is a musicality to language. There's obviously not very music to my voice, much music to my voice today. There's musicality to language. I talk about this a lot. I've talked about it on this show before and with other writers. There's a musicality to language. When you write, it should sound good. I have very little patience for novelists who write like they're writing a screenplay. I do not enjoy reading Michael Crichton's novels because he will have good ideas, but he writes them, for the most part, like a screenplay. There's no musicality to it. It's just da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, mechanical. You know, a robot could write this. It's like he had the Novel Writer 5000 software. You plug in an idea, you plug in some characters, and it constructs a novel. But it's not going to sound pretty. To use the musical analogy, it's going to sound like a computer came up with some digital song as opposed to Mozart or Beethoven or Led Zeppelin, you know, whoever you want to say, actually wrote nice sounding, interesting, lovely music. Language, words, sentences, paragraphs, they have a musicality and a poetry to them, even if they're not poetry. And you need to work on that. You need to put some thought into it. Even if it's fast-paced, action, 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 pulpy stuff, that's great. But even then, there's a style to it. There's a way to make it sound felicitous, as we say, to sound good. And that just takes some work. I can't tell you specifically because everybody's different. But it's just something that you need to think about and not just ignore and make it like you're writing the phone book. And in fact, I always say, and I may mention this again later, I can't see my entire list right now, but it certainly helps to read poetry. Now you may say, oh gosh, I don't want to be a poet. I don't want to write poetry. Well, okay, I didn't say write poetry. I said read poetry. And as I'll say in a minute, read everything, but including poetry. Because if you read poetry, it will get your brain thinking in terms of what the words sound like and how the sentences and lines fit together. And if you can understand in your own mind how words can sound, how sentences can sound, it opens up new vistas of writing for you. It makes a whole new world where you can actually construct something that's lovely, that's pretty, that sounds good. It doesn't just mechanically do the job. And it's something you should devote your time to. I think that probably, and I'm going to continue using my own examples in this thing, for my own work, probably Lucian, Dark God's Homecoming, is the one where I put the most effort into this. It's a first-person novel. Everything is from the point of view of this one character. And so I was very specifically trying to convey the unique, idiosyncratic way that he thinks and talks. And so he says things and goes off on tangents that I would never have done in a third-person, objective sort of viewpoint story. And I'm crossing over another river, by the way, so you're hearing me going over the... I don't know what river this is. It's a very big one. But Lucian was representing a particular viewpoint, and I put a lot of study into poetry before and during the writing of that book because I wanted my brain thinking that way. That's that Roger Zelazny influence that even if you're just writing, you know, action pulp, it can still sound good and be attractive as literature, basically, and not just a mechanical process. Okay, next up, and I mentioned character before. There are tricks, there are ways of understanding your characters before you ever start writing a story or a book. There are different ways you can do it. One way, which, again, when I was younger, seemed ridiculous, is that you can write little scenes or stories with your characters that you're never intending to publish, just to get to know them better. Put them in a situation and see how they react. And who knows, you may end up finding a place to use that later. But if you don't, it's okay. Because better to write a 4-page story and get to know your character than to write a 300-page novel and realize at the end that you never really knew your character, and so he or she didn't behave consistently and normally and naturally. So that's one trick. Another is to go into the first-person mode, at least in your own mind, or as a story, like I was just describing, and put yourself completely in their shoes, and sort of force yourself to react to things not as you would, but as they would if you were in their situation. There are other ways, but one way or another, understand your characters and base things on their natural reactions and not on your artificial expectations. Okay, we've covered that one pretty thoroughly. But you can plot out certain beats in advance, and you can sort of aim your characters in that direction. I've mentioned in other episodes that one of the big things I do when I write a novel generally is when I start getting the idea for the novel overall, often it will come to me in the guise of several independent, very visually oriented scenes, almost like set pieces from a movie. In Lords of Fire, I knew at some point there was going to be a clash in another dimension that involved supernatural beings. I knew there was going to be a scene later on in it where there would be something happen inside a huge church like the Hagia Sophia in Istanbul. In Sons of Terra, I knew all along that there was going to be a scene in a giant courtroom, a throne room, of a dimensional portal opening and futuristic space marine type soldiers pouring out and having a giant battle as they emerge from another dimension into ours to attack a fort from the inside, a fortress or a capital building. So I knew those scenes were there. I didn't really know why or how to get to them at first, but by kind of putting them into the plot structure, I could aim towards them so that when the opportunity came up in the process of writing the earlier parts of the story to figure out where are they going next, if those scenes jumped up and said, hey, this would be a good place for that to happen, I could aim in that direction. So again, you don't want to force your characters necessarily, but I'm not one of those what they call seat of the pants writers either, where you just have no idea. I like to have these little benchmark scenes waiting, ready and available, so that when the opportunity comes to use them, I can basically construct them as the opportunity arises. Okay. Be prepared for unexpected developments. If you do what I said previously and make your characters real enough, then they are going to start making decisions for themselves without consulting with you. To people that don't write, this sounds crazy. But it's not. Because basically, if you make your characters real enough, then part of your brain is thinking like that character. And so when you're writing their actions and their dialogue and moving them along through the story, That part of your brain says, no, that would not be normal. That would not be natural for this character to do that. And so you can ask that part of your brain, oh, yeah, well, then what would you say they would do? And that part of your brain will say, I think they would more likely do this. And then the rest of your brain has to go, oh, yeah, I admit that would be more normal, a more natural reaction. Now let me see if I can make that work in where I was going with the story. If you can, great. If you cannot, then you need to modify your plot to reflect the revised actions of the characters. All right. Absorb ideas from everywhere. Read. Read in lots of genres. Read poetry, as I said before. Read stuff that's not your favorite thing. I've known people who wanted to write Star Wars stories. Okay? Well, very few people get to do that, but bless your heart, good luck with it. So I will say, so what are you reading that's helping you become a Star Wars writer? And they will say, I'm reading Star Wars novels. And I go, No. It's all well and good to read Star Wars novels to know what's already been done. That's just your basic research. But to actually be a writer who can professionally do those things, you need to read everything that's not Star Wars and bring ideas from those things in. Because if all you read is Star Wars, all you're going to write is another Star Wars novel just like the ones you just read. And that's not what people want. They want something new in that universe. So some of the big influences on my Sentinels books are things like Master and Commander. Those books, the Patrick O'Brien books, or James Ellroy, or Donald Westlake. None of those have anything to do with superheroes. But they give you ideas for things that maybe are not being done in your field. They also give you new ideas of ways to structure your sentences and structure your paragraphs and how to sound. Writing a superhero novel where you sound just like Peter David is not new, but writing a superhero novel where you have influences of Patrick O'Brien, Frank Herbert, and Roger Zelazny, and you know that kind of thing, Donald Westlake, that's new, and so that's going to stand out. So absorb everything, and especially absorb ideas from genres that are not the one you're working in. Let's see. And last on my list, although I may add things later on, but what I have so far, last on my list is keep writing. Nobody is great at writing the first time they try to do it, or the second or third maybe. And the best authors out there, for the most part, still have editors. And then we all have read books by very famous writers where it's obvious that the writer has so much influence that they no longer allow the editor to have influence over their work. And it shows, right? And you go, oh, this guy needed an editor, right? This guy thinks he knows best, and he really needed somebody to come in and stand up to him and say, no, no, you need to do this. You need to do that. How many acknowledgments have you read in novels over the years where the author will say, I have to thank my editors, this person and this person. They made me go back and do it over again, and it's much better now, and I hated it at the time, but now I'm glad I did it because it made a stronger book. I've read acknowledgments like that 1,000 times in books. Having other eyes on it always makes a difference. So keep writing and understand that what you do the first time or two is not necessarily going to be great, but if you keep at it, you'll get better and better just like anything else. One way of looking at that, I've seen this and I've heard this said many times before, it's a totally absurd statement, but it makes a larger point, and that is every writer has X number of words of bad writing in them. And the only way to overcome that is to just keep writing And eventually you'll write all those bad writing words out, and you'll be to the good stuff. Now, of course, that's ridiculous. That's not what's actually happening. But in effect, it is. Because what it means is you write all the bad stuff, and eventually you get better, and now what you're writing is good stuff. It's almost like, you know, it's kind of like if you turn the faucet of the hot water on a cold day. A lot of what comes out first is cold. And you're like, no, I didn't want cold water. I wanted hot water. Well, you know, you sit down to write the first few times, and what comes out is not hot water, it's cold water. And you say, no, I didn't want bad writing to come out here on the keyboard, on the screen. I wanted good writing. Well, sure, everybody does. And if you keep going, the cold water will run out, and you'll have the hot water. And now you can cook, right? Now you can really roll. So the only way to get past the bad stuff to the good stuff is to stay at it. And that takes me now full circle back to my original point, which is that the only way you can stay at it is to have confidence, to believe that you are doing the things I've just talked about, you are sticking to it, you have developed confidence in yourself because you know that the things you're doing will make you better, that you're following the rules and inventing your own rules. Because again, once you learn your artsy, then you can get craftsy. Or did I say it backwards? I said it backwards now. Yeah. Learn your craftsy before you get artsy, right? So you know that you're getting better and better at your craft the more that you work at it. And you know that the better you get at it, the more confident you can be, and the better the next thing you write will be. So, all right. So I've said enough about that. So to kind of summarize and bring this to a conclusion, if you really want to write and write professionally or just for fun, but you want to write stuff that's well done, even if it's just for fun, and that's fine, then take it seriously, put thought into it, read all kinds of stuff, think about what you're reading, read outside of your favorite genres, get new ideas, throw them all in the hopper and let them bounce around so that there are no new ideas, but what you get are new combinations of old ideas. That's a very important point that I haven't mentioned so far, which is every good idea for a novel had been written by about 4000 BC. You know, it had been chiseled into a rock somewhere by 4000 BC. So what we do today is find new characters and new stories by taking pieces of all those stories and rearranging them and reshaping them into something that's exciting and new and different, hopefully. And so, you know, if you have confidence in yourself, if you take your craft seriously, if you get right into the action, if you know your characters well, if you let your characters drive the action, and you have milestones you want to hit, you know, again, this doesn't work for everybody, I guess, but scenes in mind that you're wanting to get to that are exciting and fun, that provides a lot of momentum and a lot of motivation for me. When I have those scenes in my mind that I'm trying to get to, I'm going to keep writing chapter 3 because I know that coming up down the road in maybe chapter 7 or maybe chapter 11 or maybe chapter 20, but somewhere in the future, I'm going to get to do that really cool set piece scene with the soldiers coming through the portal into the palace, you know, and having the firefight. That's the scene I'm really looking forward to doing. And if I keep doing what I'm doing in chapter 2 and 3 and 4, eventually I'll get to that scene. So that gives me motivation. It gives me incentive to keep going. That's one of the many reasons why I feel like at least loosely plotting is important, because now you know you're going somewhere. You may not know exactly where you're going or how you're going to get there, but at least you know you are going somewhere. There's a destination in mind. All right, so let me check and make sure I've hit all my points. Yes. Okay. And so, let's see now how we're doing on time. 51? Yeah, good. Okay. All right. So, that's been, you know, what we've done tonight is we looked at the convention and we looked at sort of basic rules for novel writing. What I would love is if you have a question about this, a comment about this, if there's something that I've totally gotten wrong in your opinion, or if there's big things I've left out, that's entirely possible. A lot of this was just off the top of my head. My little list was just off the top of my head. Send me an email, send me a tweet, send me a message on Facebook, however you want to do it. And let me know what I need to go back and talk about further, and we can do a second episode. And maybe we can talk about things like markets and marketing and promotion and venues and all the sort of things that are out there that exist to give you the opportunity to do something with this today. Because writing it is only step one. If the only audience you have in mind is yourself, that's great. But a lot of people would like other people to get to experience their story too. And for those of you that are that way, we can have that conversation, in the days to come. Okay, so I'm going to hand the show back over to my future self now, who's not in a car driving through Kentucky. I've been in Kentucky this entire time. Crazy. This White Rocket episode was recorded live in Kentucky. And future Van will tell you what else is going on as this episode is getting ready to go out to the public. So thanks a bunch for listening. I hope that you learned something useful or interesting. Even if you disagree with everything I just said, that's fine. And like I said, get in touch with me if you're interested in sharing your own thoughts, your own tricks, your own ideas, your own critiques of what I've just talked about. All right, back to Future Van. Bye.
Thanks for listening, everyone. The White Rocket's going to get on out of here for another episode. We'll be back next time with a very special guest and a very special episode dealing with animated television. So, see you all down the road.
Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.